Oh, well, mine's Starkey and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Gene and the people that invited us down from the River City Roundup to share our experience drinking Hope. This is a nice, calm, quiet little town. I like that. You know, Dallas is wild, so. Anyway, I'm just going to tell you, most everything I know about myself I learned after I got sober. And so I'm just going to kind of tell you what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born and raised in Dallas, and I was a fat little kid. And you know, fat little kids, people made fun of me. And it really, really hurt my feelings, but I didn't. Well, you know, I was too cool to let you know you hurt my feelings, and so I had to take other measures, and so I beat people up and that talked bad about me, because that's what you did at my house. Whoever hollered the loudest won, and you know, it was quite okay to rant and rave and throw stuff out in the front yard, backyard, whichever yard you got to first, and you know, to just act a fool, all that was appropriate at my house. Just don't be crying and, you know, moping around. You wouldn't have none of that. But, you know, you could scream and holler and cuss and chase each other. That was fair game, too. But there wasn't no crying and, you know, belly aching and all that, because that wasn't all right at our house. So, I grew up in a crowd. You know, I think I was okay until I was about 5. And the reason I say that is that when I was 5, my mother had another child, and I wasn't a baby anymore. And that really hurt my feelings. Nobody talked to me about it. Nobody asked me what was going on. Nobody told me there was somebody else coming. And it's just all of a sudden, I wasn't a baby anymore. And you know, that's devastating when you're 5. It was to me, anyway. So I spent the other next few years trying to act bad enough, so goddamn it, somebody pay me some attention. Because I require a lot of maintenance, you know? And if you just roll by and pet me every now and then, you know? That's good. That works for me. So, anyway, I felt neglected, and when I got on in, I was quite a bully because the brother, I had a little brother and a big brother, and so I was in the middle, and, you know, all hell broke loose, and we watched wrestling every Friday night, and we had wrestling Monday through Friday, so was wrestling, and then we watched it on Saturday, and so, you know, I grew up kind of rough and a little bit mean and pretty loud. So, needless to say, you know, it just seemed to go bad after that. So, anyway, I know that whipping people's ass worked good for me for a long time. I'll just put it like that. It's a real good way to keep people away so they don't have to know you. You know, because people don't want to be around that, to tell you the truth. When you chase them down, they will run. And it's... that did work real well for me for a long time, and I, you know, when something works, you just keep on doing it. So I was pretty much a fighter and a bully for a long time, and I tell you, I started drinking when I was about 12. I had an older brother, and we told my daddy we was gonna have to quit school if he didn't get us a car. He was. My folks wasn't ever home. We'd done been kicked off every bus. They couldn't pay the bus driver to haul us around. You know, they have the free bus, and then they have the bus that'll come right to your door, and you have to pay them. And my daddy, he couldn't pay the bus driver to come by our house. And so, one time they kicked us off way away, probably about 8 miles from our house, and made us walk home. And my daddy didn't even care about that. Well, y'all just walk to school. I said, I can't walk to school. I just can't. You know, yeah, we were a little rotten, but who cares? You know, you know, when we were young, we played that guilt trip, you know, because, like, my folks both worked, and so we never got any nurturing, so to speak. So, you know, we played that guilt ticket all the way for a long time. And so my daddy was going to have to quit school, so he got us this. So my daddy's a mechanic, too, and so is everybody in my family. I'm a fourth-generation mechanic. And so everybody, my dad had some old cars around his shop, and he gave us a 56 Buick something that was long as this room right here. And by God, we had a car. I got a bunch of stories I can tell you about that car, but I'll miss the whole point. So anyway, that's how it is. You know, if alcoholics sets his mind to something, they're going to get something. And you know, everybody in my family had alcoholic behavior long before we ever took a drink. And just the lying and the manipulating, the conniving and all those kind of things. And the main characteristics of alcoholics having defiance. And we had a lot of that going on. And so anyway, I got my first DWI right out of high school. I didn't finish high school living at my folks' house. I had to live at somebody else's house because my parents wanted to pick my friends. And I told them they can't pick my friends. And so anyway, I ran away from home and stayed down in Galveston for about a year. And I don't know, I came back, my room was carpeted, they painted this place. I thought, damn, I ought to run away more often. Because my parents felt guilty all the time. They felt guilty. They didn't know nothing about us. They didn't know nothing about any of their kids. And every time, you know, I started going to juvenile home when I was 13 for being drunk up on Buckner Boulevard, which was the straw up there where everybody ran their hot rods and stuff. You know, I was raised in the 50s when you rolled your cigarettes up in your sleeve, you know, wore pony taps on your shoes and drag them by your bicycle and make sparks. You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. Anyway, so I've been getting in trouble for a long time, and you know, every time I ever got in trouble, I'd call somebody to come get me, and as soon as they'd pick me up, that was the last anybody ever said about it, talked about it. Nobody ever mentioned it again. It was never talked about. And when I'd say, you remember that time? I'm like, no, I don't remember that. My mother never remembered anything. And so, you know, nobody wanted to talk about anything that was going on in our lives. And kids were just wild. I mean, we're all just maniacs. My brother got kicked out of school for catching the school on fire. And, I swear to God. And I was always beating the boys up, you know. I didn't want to fight the girls because I like the girls. But I will whip a boy's ass in a minute. So anyway, we had a wild, and it was like the Beverly Hillbillies gone to I don't know where. Anyway, we was kind of rough and rowdy crowd, so. After I got out, I started getting DWIs my first year out of high school, and I got one, and, you know, it wasn't but a $25 fine when I got my first DWI. I don't even think it was a misdemeanor, it was a ticket or something. But they still count. After they start counting them up, when you get older, they still count. So anyway, I got a DWI, and then I got another, and hell, it wasn't long after that I got another, and got another one, but I beat one somewhere in the middle there. So, you know how that is. If you beat one, it don't count. So, yeah. Because if they made a mistake in their paperwork or something, it really didn't matter to me. So anyway, I moved out of y'all, I want to tell you this, though. In 1972, I started playing women's professional football. I played for the Dallas Blue Bonnets from 72 to 76, and they paid us, I think, it was something cheesy, maybe $25 a game, and they flew us all over the United States, and we played women's professional football with NFL rules, and we just whooped the shit out of one another on Friday or Saturday afternoon, and that was pretty fun. It was all because, you know, we were just drunk. We were just drunk and playing football. I mean, and just puke on the sidelines, and man, we're just drunk. Talking sick, drunk, but we had fun. Somebody told me we did. I know we had fun. But I have the bruises to show I had fun. I had some fun. But anyway, that folded in about 76, and I really thought that my career, you know, I wanted to be a professional athlete. When you can get drunk and have fun and somebody paid you for that, is that the life or what? So I thought I was going to be a professional athlete, and then that all went to hell in 76, so I was distraught at the don't know, I think I must have been like 24 or 23 or something, you know, so I thought my life was over. You know how in your 20s you go through one of those things that things ain't working out your way, so, oh my God, my life is over. And so I kind of thought that, and I was kind of depressed for a while because I was drinking so much that, you know how when you drink so much you just can't drink anymore? I hated that. Because you just couldn't do anything with yourself, you know? It's just like, oh, I just want to do something, but I can't do anything. And when they talk about the jumping off place where you can't imagine living with or without alcohol, and I was like that for a while, but I thought, man, you know, I'm too young for this. So one of my friends talked me into, we were going to go to church. Because she said if Grandpa all had a church and that we could, you know, like square up there, because I think inside every one of us, we always have known that somehow, somewhere, that God is the answer. There's something inside of us that tells us that we are not going to be able somehow to figure this all out, and we've got to have help. And, of course, being a smart ass, I didn't want to ask for help, so you know how that goes. So, anyway, my friend, her grandpa was a Pentecostal. All I have in Texas is Baptist and Pentecostal. So, I'm not kidding. I'm serious. And one is as bad as the other, you know? And so I'm not going to get into that, but what I will tell you is that I tried as hard as I could to be that good, and it just isn't going to happen. Reality sets in at some point. It's like, what's the use, you know? But I did learn some useful information, and that's God loves me, and I'm going to hell. I had that to work with, and I thought, well, hell, if we're going to hell, I mean, what are we not to lose, you know? And so I proceeded on my merry way to go to hell. And I started back, you know, I'm quite an entrepreneur in my own mind. I like to play the big dog all the time. And to play the big dog, you know, you got to have a lot of liquor, a lot of beer, a lot of this, a lot of that, you know. You got to have mix some drugs in there. And, you know, I had a good job because I was an electrician at a steel mill. And I had a good job. So, you know, I was pulling good money. So I had a new boat. And I had a new truck. And I had a big house. And I had a stereo you could hear three blocks away whether you wanted to or not. I had all those kind of things. But, I was a party animal of the town. Not just my block, the town. And it was a small town, and so, you know, that doesn't ever last too long either. I partied around there as hard as I could, as loud as I could for a few years, and then I ended up, let's see, how did this work? I got a DWI and was on probation for DWI. You know how that kind of convicted for the same thing, then you end up going to prison, so I... In 85, I went to prison for the first time. It was 84, 85. You know, it was 84 because it was Thanksgiving. I got there on Thanksgiving evening. Yeah, and somebody gave me some cheese and peanut butter crackers. I thought, well, I missed the food or what? Yeah. If you miss the food, there's not seconds, you know, so... Anyway, I caught up with some of my old buddies. You know, I'd always been telling people what a punk and how tough I was. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that egotistical shit we come up with to try to make ourselves feel special. And so I did about 8 months in prison. And I got right back out and drunk before I got home to Dallas. And I liked it that way. And life was just too hard to deal with. So anyway, I started chasing this little old girl. Woke up in a blackout in El Paso. No habla espanol. So, like a good alcoholic, I ran out and got me a job at this guy that was a coke dealer. And I didn't know. But I never had anything to do with coke. That shit didn't last long enough for me. So I've never had a problem with cocaine. That's about the only thing I've never had a problem with. but everything else is a problem for me. And so, anyways, and you know, they sell Meister Brown beer for $1.99 a case in El Paso. And you know what? That's too much. Till I couldn't no more and just was sick all the time and started, my buddy was all, oh, he would go off on a coke binge for days and I wouldn't see him and he'd come back and blah, blah. I said, where you been? Oh, I've been sleeping for three days? You need to do some of this kind of thing. You won't sleep at all, you know. So, you know, because I'm a methamphetamine dealer and been doing it for a long time. And so anyway, I'm running back and forth to Dallas getting some dope and getting lots of quantities, and then I got busted in Monahans, Texas, and all of a sudden I went to, you know, when you're a drug dealer, you got such a facade going on. It's like you're really something, you know? Like anybody gives a damn. And so, you know, yeah, I had this big drug attorney, and he was going to get me off, and he told me all this stuff, and blah, blah. And I had a half a pound of methamphetamine that I got caught with, and so. But I didn't want to tell, it was for my personal use, but I don't want to tell them that. So anyway, that's a whole other story. I'm going to tell y'all that in some other time. Anyway, I stayed out of prison for a couple years with the little antique truck I put up. Little 252 Crosley pickup. They don't make very many of those. They only made 600 of them, and I had one. But, you know, you will put your mama's house up to get out of jail. If I could have got a hold of it, I would have traded that instead of my pickup, but I couldn't do that. Anyway, I got out of jail and blah, 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 and ended up, you know, trying to act the big dog and fly my lawyer back and forth and do all this. And after a while, you know, your priorities get to where it is drink and do drugs. That's all. They can go to hell. Because, you know, I mean, shit rolls downhill and there you go. I spent a lot of money, too, just on attorney fees and all that. And then somewhere out of the blue, I ended up going to Monahan's with a court-appointed attorney and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't find out till after I was sentenced that I was his first case out of college. And I got 20 years in TDC. You know, that wasn't so cute, and I wasn't so tough, and matter of fact, I was a little bummed out about that. I'm going back to prison, and, you know, I couldn't figure out what went wrong, you know, because it used to be so much fun. You know, and it wasn't supposed to go down like this. You know, it wasn't supposed to end like this, you know. I could have gone down in a plane crash with Buddy Holly or something like, you know. I'm not in the handcuffs going to penitentiary for 20 years. I mean, shit, what happened? You know, I'm trying to think, what happened? What happened? You know, it wasn't supposed to go down like this. I just couldn't get that out of my mind, man. Because, you know, when I was young, it was fun. Then I got to look at it, it's like, damn, you know, you're not that young anymore anyway, so. Man, the gig was up. So I went back to prison, and this time I'm not so cute, and I'm not so tough, and I'm not all that. And I'm kind of bummed out, and I see no reason to lie anymore. You know, for years it's like, no, I wasn't guilty, I didn't do any of that. You know, only half of the people in prison are guilty. You can ask any of them, they'll tell you. Maybe less than that, but anyway. I didn't have anything to lose at that point, and so whenever I went into diagnostics, and they asked me, oh, they want to know everything. You know, when did you drink? How much did you drink? Why did you start drinking? Did you drink in the daytime? Did you do beer, alcohol, wine? What did you really drink? Well, did you do drugs with that? And, you know, did you do, how long have you been doing drugs? With people or by yourself or in the house? Damn. And so, you know, I told them the truth. Yes, yes, no, a lot, maybe, no, I don't know. And a few days later, they came back, and they told me that they thought I had a drug and alcohol problem. You know, I felt rather insulted. And I'm serious about that because, you know, I don't mind being a convict, but an alcoholic, I don't care. I really was insulted by that, and I was a bit humiliated. And I thought, you know, can life get any worse? You know, going to prison ain't that bad. You know, you can live that down. But being an alcoholic, and then they told me that I had to go. Dear Governor Ann Richards was the governor of Texas then, and to this day I owe her a hug, man, because she did that. It kind of saved my life. Well, it did save my life because she insisted that anybody in for drug and alcohol-related crimes was supposed to attend 33 AA meetings. There's parole stipulation, and so you didn't get any kind of parole paperwork, nothing gone, like I had to worry about parole when I got there. But anyway, so she insisted we go to Alcoholics Anonymous for 33 meetings, and I thought, let me go ahead and get in here and get this knocked out, you know, so I can do something else. And the longer I stayed and the more I was there, you know, the more the drugs and the alcohol wore off and the more reality set in, and I'm looking and double razor wire on the top and the fence around you all the time, laying on that hard ass steel bed. You gotta pay somebody two cookies to kick your mattress just to get the lumps and turned around so where you don't hurt your neck. And just all the shit you have to live with, you know, sticks in the green beans, shit, the little things in life. Yeah. I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy. I was having a real hard time liking you or liking me or, you know, really having any interest in life at all, pretty much. And you know, I just felt like a loser, to tell you the truth. I just felt like a loser. And so anyway, I had to go to AA, and I walk in the first day, and, you know, this is in 1989, and I walk in the first day up in TDC. They had a command building. It looks like an old fort out of San Antonio or something. I mean, this building is old. It's probably built in the 1919s or something. 1918, I think, was when it was built. So, you know, it's old and all cold and ugly and bricks and they were boring gray. They paint everything. So, anyway, I went up there and, you know, I was like bummed out, embarrassed, humiliated. They had made me go to AA. And I'd do some time, but damn, I had to go to AA too, you know. I'm just really dragging my tail about this, you know, because it's just, I can't believe it's come to this. And so. So I walk in and I'm just kind of like, you know, the worst nightmare AA meeting, and I walk over, I'm just hanging my head, and there was these, you know, there's a group in every meeting, these four or five little gals sitting right on the front row, and they're so damn happy I want to kick their ass. Maybe I'm going to run up to the door and say, hey, come on in, how you doing? I'm about to hear you. And it's like, no. And so I sit at the back of the room, and you know, I'm kicking up under everybody's chair and see what they're doing and trying to poke the girls and see who's got jewelry, you know, and see if anybody's got any status there that I need to get into. You know, just checking it out and counting the dead flies in the windowsill and the ceiling tiles. You know how we do the multiplication thing. It's 7-0-4 out. And take off the ones with the fluorescent lights. And, you know, because I'm convinced that my problem is the police and it is not alcohol and drugs. And the main reason I'll tell you that is that I've never, ever been to jail that the police weren't involved. That right there convinced me that, you know, the police were my main problem. And if I could get them up off me, I'd probably do all right. So, anyway, I'm really having a hard time being me. I really don't know who I am right now, you know. I just used to be so much fun, you know, and now I'm just so bored. And you can play head games in there, but I don't want to play head games, and I'd rather fight. So the only head game I want to play is hog the TV. And the reason I like to hog the TV is because you can make the most people miserable with the least amount of effort. And if I'm not happy, I don't want you to be happy. So I would hog the TV all day long on Sunday. And that was quite enjoyable. Come on, Sonny, you didn't want something outside football. You weren't down here at 3 o'clock when we voted. Like, I'm the only one who's there. I sit there all day long to watch football. All day. They can believe, aren't you hearing them looking at the bathroom? I would get somebody to hold my spot. So anyway, you know, I am not happy at all. I'm unhappy. I can't stand myself. You know, I can't even stand to think about myself. And so I'm going to these AA meetings, and I think this is a joke. And, you know, I finally want to confront one of these chipper girls at the front. It's always so damn happy, you know. I'm thinking, you know, we're in prison. And so anyway, I'm trying to check this one chick out because she's like the ringleader of them, okay? And so I figure if I can figure her out, I got the deal. So then I'm thinking, I'm not really a paranoid person, but one day I'm thinking, you know, they sit in that same spot every day. I think they have parole cameras up there. That's what it is. You know, so I'm looking at all the lights and, oh my God, there could be one right over there. You know, so then I'm tripping, you know, and finally I'm just sick of myself and I go pull one of these gals over there and I said, you know what? I just want to know what the hell you're so happy about. And she said, well, Starkey, you know, I'm working a program and I'll never have to come. She's been down 5 times, okay? I'm working a program and I never have to come here again. Well, I didn't get no program. You know, maybe like they give a newcomer packet like they do now. So I'm already feeling like out of the loop here. And she tells me that, you see, we got the steps on the wall, and I worked the steps, and when I was through, I was happy. And she, I'm there. And I could use a little joy in my life about this time. So anyway, I look at the steps and I think, okay, where's that, blah, blah, blah. 7, 10 days, I'll knock them out and I'll be happy and I go on about my business. You know, but when you look at them, they're a sentence, right? They're a sentence. I mean, please. So anyway, you know, you can put a water pump on in an hour and it's sometimes a page and a half in a book. So, you know, how hard can 12 sentences be? So I look at the first one, and I look up there and said, y'all admitted y'all was fired over alcohol and that y'all's lives have become unmanageable. But what about me? You know, alcoholics are the only people that can lay in the ditch and have to look down their nose at people. So I just didn't see how I was going to be able to bring myself down to their level. And here's the reason. The criteria in the penitentiary is uneducated. I graduated high school. Uneducated, like a 7th grade education, and come from a broken home. My miserable ass parents have been married 50 something years and plan on staying that way. My mother, right now, she is miserable too. So anyway, that stands as I said it. No. And then also you're from poverty level, you know. That was lower middle class, you know. So I wasn't that either. Most women, when they go to the penitentiary, they're pretty much forgotten by their families because they usually leave kids at home and somebody's got to keep the kids. And, you know, it's not like having, like, when the men go to prison, you know, their mama's got to ride them and they always got, if they got an old lady out there, she's going to take care of them and all this. When a woman goes to jail, you stuck out. You hear me? You stuck out. That's just how quiet it feels, too. You stuck out. So, you know, when you go to prison, you have to build a family. You know, that's the first thing women do when they get in jail. Hey, Papa! You know, the oldest doc is Papa. All the time. The oldest doc is Papa. And then you got Grandma. You got, then you got Sissy and Bubba. You know, you always got a few of them, Sissy and Bubba, you know. And then there's Mama, and you always got Daddy, you know. Daddy's just a big old lady. And if Deborah fails, that's the pecking order, okay? And so you just don't get around that, because prison is, even though you're surrounded, you never have a moment to yourself. It's so lonely, so sad, and you're so isolated. You have nothing to do but think about what you hadn't been doing, what you wish you hadn't done, what you wish you'd do if you could ever get out. And you just, your mind just goes nuts, man, but you never have a minute to yourself. And so the thing is that, you know, I decided I was going to try to work the steps. So I didn't know how I was ever going to be as low as anybody else was, because, you know, I'm somebody to me. And so I would say all these things out loud, because, you know, I got to be this big badass, you know. And I still was, even when I got out of prison, because I couldn't put that facade down for a long time. But anyway, so I was trying to work the steps, and somebody told me the thing about, I was jonesing over a beer commercial one day, and can they make some beer look good and cold on TV? God, man, you just drive me nuts with that. And so I was all into the TV on a beer commercial during a football game, and I was telling this girl, man, does that look good? You know, I'm just like foaming at the mouth and, you know, frothing. And so she said, you know, that's what got me here. And she had killed two people just driving home from happy hour or something. She really wasn't an alcoholic. But she killed two people on the side of the road to stop fix a flat tire. And you know what? I had never killed nobody. So she told me that's what got me here. I was never the same after that. That's what got me here. You know, I'm very stubborn, but I'm not stupid. I'm damn stubborn. You call me stupid sometimes, but I'm not. I'm, you know, and so the thing is that started thinking about it. That's what got me here. What if drugs and alcohol was what got me to prison? What if drugs and alcohol was what had gotten me to jail? Somebody else was, because, you know, I'm somebody to me. And so I would say all these things out loud, because, you know, I got to be this big badass, you know, blah, 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 you know, all the same thing. Ain't I the life of the party? But, you know, I was a blackout drunk, always. They said I had a lot of fun. I couldn't really tell you. I always had a bruise to show for it, though. Where I fell down, or somebody ran over my foot with the car because I was trying to jump on the hood. You know, I was one of those kind of people. Just drunk and stupid. So, anyway, I'm in prison, and the chick tells me, well, that's what got me there. And, you know, I start thinking, well, what if drugs and alcohol have got me there? So I don't really think that is. But what if it was? Well, I don't think it is. But what if? I'm having an argument with myself now. Out loud, walking the run. But what if it is? I don't think it is. But what if it is? We can just try that. Well, I don't think we should do that. You know, that's not very good idea. Just try it. No, it ain't even going. All in my head. And the good thing about arguments with yourself is that you'll always win. And so, you know, I had caught things here and there on the times that I couldn't entertain myself any longer at AA meeting. I'd caught little tidbits of information. And I knew that I couldn't do it by myself, you know. I knew that if I had to fight it, if it took willpower or something like that, I wasn't going to be able to do it. Because if I had to fight the urge to drink and do drugs and fight and all that stuff I like to do, well, it wasn't going to work for me. And the other thing, I decided that if I was going to do this and if I was actually going to work those steps, you know what? I'm going to work it for me. I'm not going to listen to what you tell me God said. And I already heard that shit. And they told me God loved me and you're going to hell. In the blink of my eye. Who wants that shit? That's just torment us like that, you know? God, that scared me to death when I was little, you know? Between the Baptists and the Pentecostals, you ain't got a chance in Texas. You're going to prison. And they say, don't mess with Texas. They mean that. Okay, so anyway, let me get on. Let me go just a second. I went ahead and I worked the steps, and I could go through them all, and they're all funny because I had just had so many epiphanies about how stupid I've been all my life. And they, now I can see how humorous it actually is to me. Nobody else has found it humorous but me. You know, all the stupid things I've done. So anyway, I ended up working the steps, and I decided that I was going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. That way, my ultimate goal was to run in there and say, it didn't work. I tried it. I did the very best I could. And when we set our mind to something, nobody can stop us. Nobody. You might as well just go ahead and let them do it. Then his sponsor said, well, you know, I'm thinking about it. Just go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it and come back. Hope you don't drink on the way, but go and do it. Because they're going to do it anyway. That's just how we are. The characteristic of an alcoholic is defiant, childish, immature, and something else. I can't remember what the thing is. Immature, childish, and defiant. Anyway, so the thing is that I started thinking that, you know, I really could work this deal. And because what if drugs and alcohol was the reason I've been in jail and jail and jail and jail? The reason I was a 9-time convicted felon. Had 5 DWIs. I had 3 assaults on a police officer. I had 6, but my lawyer got me off the 3 of them in the same town. That's a whole other story. That's another conference. And so anyway, and I had 2 major drug charges, you know, and I just hadn't been a pleasant person most of my life, you know. And the thing was that, I'm giving it a chance, and I'm going to work the steps. And, you know, we had no guidance. We had absolutely no guidance. I didn't know that the steps were in the book until I got out of prison. And I had 3 years sober getting out of prison. I did not know the steps were in the book because nobody told us anything, you know. They said, yeah, work the steps and don't drink anymore, and hell yeah, you'll be sober. Okay, so... You know, there was a couple of us that decided we was going to try it because, you know, when you start to get in your 30s and stuff, you sort of get tired, broke down, and shit, either you got a bad knee or you got a broke arm or you ain't got no teeth left or somebody done pulled your hair out, you know? So, especially in prison. Especially in prison. Ain't got one eye left, ain't here. It's always something. So anyway, there was a couple of us, we decided we was going to work the steps because, man, somebody had to ever have some relief up in there, you know? And I was one of them. And so anyway, we started to try to work the steps. I did them just as me. And now they were so bad the first few times I did them. But the thing is I was sincere. I was as sincere as I could be. And I just ran them off the wall and did them like that. We admitted we was powerless. And the thing that made me, is that 97% of the women in Texas prison are in for drug and alcohol-related crimes. 97%. Now, the rest are baby killers and murderers. Well, I ain't ever heard nobody like that. Stabbed a couple people. They just survived, you know? I shot at a couple, but I was just trying to scare them. I've whooped a bunch of asses, though. I have done that. But, you know, I'm just a little aggressive. Anyway, so I'm finna try to get sober, and the thing is that I don't have a clue what's going on, and I'm reading these little stories in the back, and it's like, a sanitarium. Where do they have a sanitarium? I'm thinking, well, you know, is that where they have the museum thing? Or is that, you know, I'm thinking, what is a sanitarium? And you know, they use a lot of words that I didn't too much understand. And so sometimes when I read the big book, I would feel stupid. And you know, I didn't need to feel no worse about myself, so I didn't read as much as I needed to. I don't want to feel no worse about myself. I'm trying to feel better. So anyway, between all the reading and chewing and trying to do the steps, and they'd have a free world speaker come in never hearing again and try to help us get sober. And so I really couldn't relate to that, though. Like, there was a few people came in and said, you know, I wrote 2 hot checks at the liquor store, and oh, my God, I knew my drinking career was over. But you're kidding! 2 hot checks? Shit, I wrote hot checks to my mama. What you talking about? Anyway, you know, sometimes it's hard to relate to people that come in and have such a mild manner when you're in there with a bunch of convicts, you know. Recidivists is what they call us because we've been in over and over. So anyway, I stayed in the penitentiary for about 3 years, and I worked the steps a couple of times. I had a little time on my hands. And I worked the steps a couple of times, and then I was going to get out of prison. And by then, I kind of got in touch with a lot of things about me. I knew that I can't play no more. I can't deal no drugs. I can't do no drugs. And I can't drink. I know that, okay? I know that. And everything else is negotiable. But I know I can't do that, okay? Because that's what got me here. That's what got me here. So I came out of prison and I was scared. Oh, shit, I was scared. How long do I have? Did you tell me? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, I get out of prison. I'm scared to death. And, of course, I didn't know how to be scared because I had never been scared because I always acted mad about everything. You know, when you're angry, when you rage, when you do all those kind of things, it's really because you're scared. And I don't care if you think it is or not, it is. I fought that one. So anyway, the reason that I was really scared and I didn't want anybody to know I was, and so here comes my brothers. And, you know, I got two brothers and a sister, and everybody in my family has been in the penitentiary but my mother, okay? My daddy Ben, well, he went to federal, though. He learned how to read in prison. And I'm not kidding. So, you know, prison can be rehabilitating. And anyway, so both my brothers have been, and I've been twice, and my sister's been twice. And so it's kind of like when I was getting out of prison, and we had quite a good little drug business going between me and my brothers and my sister. And so they was running the business while I was gone, and then I'd wrote them letters while I was in prison, you know, trying to make things right. And I told them that, you know, I can't play with y'all no more. And, you know, I appreciate if y'all send me some money, but because I know you got some. And but you know, when I get out, I gotta stay away from y'all, you know. And any help that you can give me on that, I'd appreciate, you know, because I don't think I'm gonna be able to fight this myself. And I'm really serious this time. And I had never been serious before, but I had never told anybody I was gonna ever quit before. So. It was all new, and I was all afraid, and I didn't know how to act because hadn't ever had to be scared out loud in public, you know. And so I went, and of course my daddy was sick and tired of all those damn kids he had, and so he was finna close his business down. He got a pretty good little old shop over at Oak Cliff in Dallas, and so I took my daddy's shop over and I started working there, and all I could do was go to work. Go home, take a shower, go to a meeting, go to bed at night. I learned that in prison. Do you know that if you will get up in the morning, go to work, go to bed at night, that you can keep a job? You sure can. You can. I didn't know that. Go to bed at night, get up in the morning, go to work, you can keep a job. So anyway... when I got out of prison, I was really scared, and so I just kind of like went everywhere right quick, and it was kind of like, oh my God, I'm so scared. I played all the scenarios over in my head. What if somebody comes up and gives me a joint? What if they just pop a beer in front of me? My thing, I was just going to jump up and run. And I wasn't going to say nothing. I wasn't going to explain myself. I was just going to jump up and run. And I played every scenario. In my dreams, they had brought me every kind of alcohol, every kind. Of course, they didn't have no Red Dog, though, then. They didn't have no Zima, none of that kind of stuff. But if I could imagine it, I would have. By that time, I done got past that. So, anyway, I digress. So anyway, I was working this little old job, and, you know, I was making my $200 a week, whatever it was. It wasn't much. And watching my brothers... roll up in there with a pocket full of money and, you know, a chest full of beer and just stupid. And just all high and giggly, and I was aggravated and envious and jealous and pissed off and bummed out. But I would stand with my back against the wall, you know, and just like close my eyes, and I couldn't get to a meeting quick enough. The first day I got out of prison, I went to a meeting. I've been going to a meeting every day. The thing is that slowly but surely I watched every one of them Because I'm keep saying, you know, in my mind, well, God, that ain't fair. How come they can do it and I can't do it? You know how we do. Especially if you got any brothers and sisters. I can't believe they can do that and get away with it, and I can't do it and get away with it. I know I can't get away with it. I've been down twice and been to jail umpty hundred times. I know I can't get away with it no more. Okay? The jig is up. My name is on the list. I can't get away with it no more. But I was pissed off that they could. And so anyway, I'll sit up there and I was mad and you know, it just eat me up. I'm like, my little $200 a week, you know, it's like $200, that's it. You know, they got a pocket full of money and all jacked up and come in all happy and giggling. You know, it just ain't funny to watch that shit. You know, it wasn't nothing I was laughing about. I wasn't laughing a damn bit. And I was mad, as a matter of fact, but I was too scared to act mad. So, you know, anyway, I was a mess. And I was going to this little group, and this little group is wonderful, wonderful for newcomers. But if you got about 3 months, you need to go on and get to a group where they read the literature and stuff, you know. But they always had a pot of coffee going. You could just smoke cigarettes till you turn blue. But they, and you could stay sober up to 3 months there. I mean, for real. Well, I stayed a year and a half. And I stayed sober there, and after a while, I needed to start, you know, working the steps. So, again, so I had to go to another group, and I went to a lot of different groups in Dallas, and I didn't really feel, I mean, you know, there's a lot of little bitty, like, 6-8 people groups over in Oak Cliff, and, you know, I'm just a little too loud for them. I was, yeah, my name is Stark, and they're like, oh, God! Excuse me. I'll try to keep it down. You know, I just couldn't be myself. So anyway, I got hooked up at Lambda, and the first meeting I went to, it was a women's meeting, and it was on a Sunday morning. I went over there and I was going to sit in there, and I thought, you know, it was kind of quiet in there, and I was looking around, and I thought, ooh, tough crowd. You know, and I'm nervous, and there was this chick, and she had like 12 years sober, and she was talking about she was so tore up inside. She had so many feelings going on that she just could kill herself, you know? And it's like, ooh, I don't know if I want this to be our group or not. But in reality, I felt the same way. Except I've never been suicidal. I'm homicidal. And so I feel so bad, I want to kill you. And I mean that with all the sincerity inside me. But the thing is that I knew what that felt like to have so much pain in a big old ball inside me, compacted so tight that I could only chip off a piece of pain every once in a while. And then feel it and have to burst it like a baby. And then, oh! And over the years, I've been able to chunk and chip away at that ball of fear and insecurities and little things like that. And I'll tell you the other reason that I had to seek another group besides the little group I was going to is because when I was 4 years sober, you know, I'd just been out of prison for a year. I'd still be on parole till 2009. The same year I picked my 20-year chip. Oh, that'd be a great day. So anyway, when I was about 4 years sober, I'd been out of prison for about a year, and I was trying to run my dad's little shop, and the deal is that my dad, he wanted me to do all the work, but he didn't want me to make the decisions. And I thought I ought to hire the people I wanted to work there so that I could get along with them because I don't work well with others. He knows that. Everybody knows that. It knows me. I don't work well with others. Call it pushy or overbearing or belligerent or whatever you want to call it. I call it aggressive. It works well in business, okay? So anyway, there was this guy, and he was a pretty big guy. He was big, but he was stupid. And he was about 6'2", and he weighed a good 210, 225, something like that. And Oh, man, I used to dog this guy out. I mean, just bludgeon him with words, you know, about how stupid he was and shit like that. Because I didn't know, I had not changed a bit of my behavior. Not one bit. I was not drinking, but I was the biggest asshole you ever met. But I was sober. I was sober. And almost couldn't stand myself, but I wasn't drunk. But I needed to be, but I wasn't. But anyway, so I just dogged this guy all the time, you know, and just about everything. Yeah, he didn't have any mechanical aptitude. My dad's the one that hired him to be an inspector, to inspect the cars, you know, and I mean, like, that's a no-brainer. You know, you fill in the blank and look at the screen, they fill in the blank. I mean, you know, you don't have to, they could train monkeys to do it, absolutely, and I used to remind him of that quite often. And so, anyway, I had just about got under this guy's skin because, you know, I'm always like, Becky, you have to do that. And so one day, I was just feeling a little aggressive. And so I was finna pull a car in the shower, and I pulled it right by him real fast and close. And he thought I was going to hit him with it. He didn't know if I was going to hit him with it, I would have. But anyway, so he hops around there, and I get out of the car, you know, all slick and cool and everything. And he comes over there and bumps my chest and said, "You know what? I'm going to kick your ass!" Oh, my God. That was the wrong thing to say to me. Slick out comes my pocket knife, and I stuck him in the stomach. Pretty hard. But he was still standing. He was just like, "I thought you wanted to kick my ass! Come on! I thought you wanted to kick my ass!" And he went and called the police on me. He's the one that wanted to fight. I went to jail. Sober. For aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He's the one that started it. I tried to tell police. He started it. They said, "Well, why didn't you call the police?" I said, "Me call the police? I could handle it." I said, "I wasn't the one that was scared." Anyway, well, that turned into a crying ass mess for about 8 months. You know, I was begging God for some grace and mercy and all that kind of stuff. Oh, please, God, I didn't mean it. And one, you know, you can do some serious begging when you think you're going. They wanted a plea bargain for me for 35 to life. This would have been my 10th felony conviction. That would have called me a habitual criminal. So anyway, now I'm 4 years sober and I'm in jail. I still know some of the people down there. Oh, my God. I'm thinking, you know, what have you got yourself into? I'm having to talk with myself again. And I'm thinking, you know what? This isn't even funny. This ain't funny. He's the one that started it while I'm in jail. Oh, I should have ran and called the police on him. I couldn't do it. I just can't. I'll take things into my own hands. So anyway, I'm sitting in jail. Aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. 35 to life they wanted to give me for a plea bargain. Well, you know, I'm begging God every night on my knees in tears, demanding that he do something. Don't he know what's going on here? Can't he see what importance this means to me? And then I had just begged God till I was sick. I was sick of him. I was sick of me. And I thought, you know what, God, if you're going to send me back to prison, let's go. If you're going to send me back to prison, you got something for me to do there. I just might as well go do my job so I can get out again. I said, because you know what? I was wrong, and I did it. So I poked him pretty hard. I'm not going to beg you no more. I don't think I should have to beg you every day. You know, because it seems like somebody's a little lax on the job here, you know, for 8 months. I think my attorney kept putting it off so I'd pay him off before I went, you know, just in case I didn't get off. So anyway, just so I'd be paid up. Anyway, because you know they'll do that. So went to, the next day the phone rings. My attorney says, "We're going to court this morning." I thought, oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
it. I didn't mean to. Because, you know, I just told God, God, I'm sick of begging from you. I don't care if you send me to prison. Send me to prison. I don't care. I'm tired of begging for my life. And rah, 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 rah. And so that's the next day. The phone rings. Say, okay, we're going to court today. I said, oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I was kidding. I was frustrated. Come on, man. Don't do me like this. Because I just know I'm going to prison because I stand the guy, you know? I mean, I don't have the cleanest record in town. I'm quite aggressive. Record has. So anyway, you know, I'm just going, I'm thinking, okay, well, shit, I'm going to prison. You know what? I just don't have any way around it. So we go and go to court, and the guy gets up there, and the guy starts lying and says I hit him with the car, broke him his leg, put him in the hospital, throwed him up against the wall and all that kind of stuff. But there was two other people that were there, and one of them was my dad. My dad said, she pulled the car by him, you know, and then they started fighting. She said the hood was up. I didn't see what happened, but she didn't hit him with the car. And you know, if this guy would have told the truth, I would have done time. But he chose to lie. He was like making a big deal out of it. You know, if he'd have just told him, this girl is a bitch, she just dogged me till I couldn't stand no more. If he had told the truth, they'd have had a case. And so, here's what the guy, my attorney says, okay, now when you get up on the stand, you have to say, when he came to you, that you feared for your life. He said, I can't do that. He said, you have got to say you fear for your life. You've got to. I said, I'm not scared of that guy. Could you get a tear or something? He said, you've got to say you fear for your life. And so, you know, I am high strung anyway. I know it's hard to tell. But I am high strung and emotional anyway. So I get up there and I'm telling my side of the story. And I said, yeah, and this guy, and I didn't like him and I didn't get ready. But to tell you the truth, I just don't like straight men. I have a hard time getting along with them because, you know, I always just want to kick their ass. So, you know, then by that time, cat's out of the bag. And, because, you know, I mean, I'm nervous, okay? So I'm just blab, 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 blab. And so, and the thing that came down to is that I started telling him, I said, yeah, and I got out of the car, and he came in, Bubba, Jesse, I'm fearing for my life! I mean, I didn't really mean to start crying, but I was just so excited, you know? I just started bawling, man. I mean, I just tore it up. And so... And so anyway, they ended up and they found me not guilty. And they found me not guilty because what I really found out in the end, they only found me not guilty because my attorney had played tennis with the visiting judge and they got it in this court and the guy said, oh, bring that story, I want to hear it, that sounds great. You know, that's exactly how I got off. That's exactly how I got off. And that he had played tennis with this dude, and the guy being, oh, yeah, I'm going to be in court so-and-so. I'm the visiting magistrate. Bring that over. I'd love to hear that story. And so that's how I got off the case. You know, it's God thing. That was a God thing. Because, you know, I was still going to meetings every day and begging God to help me. And so anyway, when they found me not guilty, the guy told the dude that was, you know, who wanted to whip my ass, yeah. He told him that next time you better pick on somebody he can whip. And he told me that my behavior was socially unacceptable. He said that I couldn't just stab or beat up anybody I didn't like. And that was very foreign to me. I didn't understand that. Because that's the way I'd always done business. And then he told me that I may need to seek some therapy. I'm thinking, me? I think I'm doing just fine, you know? I could have hurt him. So anyway, I'm 4 years sober and just crazy as shit. And I'm still just a OG in the hood, you know? I'm still just a gangster on the street. I'm still just a loudmouth punk with bad behavior and a filthy mouth. But I'm sober. So they made me go to this stuff, and I had to learn how to feel insecure and... had to learn how to feel embarrassed. I also had a problem with I beat up a lot of Mexican guys. And I don't mean no disrespect to no Hispanic people. But the thing is, and I found out later that when they would speak Spanish to me, I felt insecure because I didn't understand Spanish, and so I would whip their ass. But I didn't know that that's what it was, okay? Actually, I thought they were talking bad about me, and I thought they were talking some shit about me. You know, I'm going to defend myself. They just wanted me to, like, do a tune-up, you know? See that I maybe checked their check engine light, you know? But all of that sounded the same to me. In my head, they were just talking shit about me, you know? And I can't let that go on. And so anyway, that was another reason that I had to go. And so anyway, I had to go to therapy, and they told me that I had to start learning how to feel my feelings. And I had to learn how to, I had a thing for when the Mexican would come up and speak to me, I'd have to pull this stick out of my pocket. And it said, stop. And that meant to stop and turn around and walk away. And on the other side, it said, feel. First, I had to go ask Roy. It was supposed to say, uno momento. This came from the top. Uno momento. And I had to go get a guy that spoke Spanish for them to come and say, he wants to know, can you look at his front end because it's like pulling one side. Said, okay, yeah, I can do that. I have not had a fight with a Mexican since. That's right. There you go, it works. So anyway, that was my thing about that. And anyway, it took me a couple years to get it down. I've only had a few fights since then, hadn't I? I've done good. Most of them were with my friends anyway, so. So anyway, I had to go to therapy. I had to learn how to feel inadequate. I had to learn how to feel. Because, you know, when I was a kid, we never got to do any of that. All we could do was beat each other up. That was our solution to everything, was to beat each other up. And then I found out that was socially unacceptable, and that you couldn't beat up anybody you want because they will press charges. And so after all that went on, I'm going to tell you this last story, and then I'm going to quit, okay? Okay, come on, come on, you gotta quit up. Okay, and so then when I was about two, three years out of prison, all this time that I was all envious of my brothers and my sister and stuff, they had all got busted. And so now they're all in prison and I'm not. You know, I'm pretty happy about that. Because I had been so envious, you know, they could be out and they're dealing drugs and they're doing all this and I'm pissed. And so now they're in, and I'm not. Now I'm happy. I thought, you know, I knew I had it right. I knew I did. And you know that feeling that, you know, this is going to work. This will work. And I had that feeling going on for me. And so then my dad, of course, he always wants to have his hand in the basket, and he does looks like our chief enabler and meddling in everybody's business and all. So when they get out of prison, he decides they're all going to work at the shop. Oh. See, and I had totally the other idea. I thought, oh, this is going to be great. They're going to come and, like, we could hold hands and have prayer and stuff before we start work. And, you know, I'm still 8 inside. So something happened to me when I was 8. I don't know what it is, but I'm still 8. And so, you know, I've got this fantasy thing going on. Like, we're going to have a happy life. Wow, we might all get along now, you know. Wouldn't this be great? We could come to each other with our problems and we could stand over a troubled car and have a word of prayer or something like that. You know? I'm really tripping. And I'm thinking, it could happen. So anyway, they all get out of prison, and it's a cat fight at the dog pound every day. I mean, me and my oldest brother almost fist fought a couple times. And there was shit flying, and you had to duck and weave and all that. And I put up with that for 2 more years, and my sponsor kept telling me, you know, he would have to come get me from work, you know, because I'm saying, John, you better come get me! I'm thinking of doing something crazy! And so his suggestion was, have you ever thought about leaving? I'm not leaving, I was here first. Because, you know, I'm thinking, but this is cool, you know, I have my own little shop, I can hire my own people, and I have people I can get along with, people that like me. And all this kind of aggressive stuff. And so, anyway, finally, one day I'd had enough, and
Me and my brother got into it about something. He didn't like for me to hug the customers. And I'm just a huggy person. He said that was unprofessional. And that's what we had our last blowout about. He said, it's unprofessional to hug the customers. I said, that's just because number one, I hug you. That's all you want. And so anyway, that started it. We went on from there. Because I'm trying to have a serene, happy life. You know, I'm sober. I just got off this bad rap that I was finna do some time for. So I'm quite intrigued with life, you know. I'm glad to be alive. And I want to have some fun, damn it. You know. So I want to hug the customers. And my brother's just really pissed about that because he's bitter anyway. And so anyway, the thing is, I put up with 2 more years of that. And, you know, we're just fighting every day and blah, blah, blah. And he's on my 4-step every time I have one, like once a week or whatever. And my sponsor has to come get me all the time from work to keep us from committing further crimes. And so what it all comes down to is one day I just went in and locked my toolbox. And I thought, you know what, this just isn't fun anymore. Just isn't fun anymore. And I don't care. You can take it. You all go to hell. I don't care what happens with you. And I locked my toolboxes up. I said, I'll be back to get them later. And I walked off. And I just never turned back. And the thing is that what I found out is that, you know, my way usually isn't the right way. I wanted that because I wanted, I want, I want. I think this ought to be my shop, you know. I had big dreams for this. Well, what ended up happening is that I ended up going into business for myself. I'm the only one that can get along with me. I quite enjoy ourselves, but, you know. So, anyway, there's a lot of people to play with up here. Anyway, so I went into business for myself, and I get along just fine. And anyway, I did notice that whenever I, and as a matter of fact, I've had a very good and successful and prolific business for like 5 years now. You know, I've been on my own for 5 years, and it's really good. And that's what God wanted all the time, but because I couldn't let go. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, they've taught me the little things in Alcoholics Anonymous to like, well, you know, what if it's not supposed to be your way? You know, that was so incomprehensible to me. What if it's not supposed to work out the way you think it ought to? Well, hell, it just can't work out then, you know? And they had to teach me. I was just such a slow learner because I came with a real rocky foundation. You know, I was sober 3 years, maybe even 4 years before I knew the steps were in the book. We didn't read much, you know. I mean, I read all the Daniel Steele. It was a little more interesting than the big book when I was in prison. And there wasn't a chance in hell I was ever going to get that raisin wine done down in the kitchen because the girls couldn't keep their mouths shut. So the thing is that whenever I got out of prison, it was really, really slow for me, you know. But the one thing that I knew is that AA was going to be the way out for me. And it was really, really hard when I had to do the things like do a 4-step and tell somebody, you know, to have to show somebody your dirty drawers, you know? I mean, it's embarrassing, it's humiliating, it's belittling. But, you know, I had to make a decision inside of myself that I got to do this. Man, if you did it, I can do it. If you did it, I can do it. And, you know, I say that to anybody that's a newcomer here. If I can do this, you surely can do it. Because most of you have more sense than I have, you know? And aren't as belligerent and loudmouthed and, you know, all the other things go with that. The thing is that to put that initial pride down. You know what? I had to hear it over and over and over and over. And you know, just to this day, even with if I stay sober till December, you know, we'll have 13 years, but until every day, I still go to a meeting every day. Because you know, I drank every day. I drank alcohol every single day, all day long. I was a drunk at work. I was always drunk at work. But you know, The thing about it is I had to go to AA every day, and even if I would hear one little thing like, come back. You know, y'all are the only people that ever asked me to come back. And I appreciate that. I love you guys. And so anyway, you know, I got a good life today, you know, and it's been slow for me. It's been really, really slow for me because I'm so stubborn and I want to do it my way. And then I find out my way doesn't work and it all goes to hell. And then I have to say, okay, tell me what I'm really supposed to do. So then I end up having to do it like that anyway. It's almost getting to the point where I will ask someone's opinion first. Almost. And that's progress, you know, and that's what this whole thing's about. It's just about every day we get a little bit more willing and a little bit more willing. And, you know, I've only learned all those things through Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just so glad that nobody's ever, you know, told me to get my ass up and get out of here and, you know, because they're so encompassing and so much love and kindness and tolerance, you know. And love and tolerance is our code. And I know that so well today because, you know, nobody ever tried to run me out of AA. And I forever am grateful for that because, you know, I've been run out of just about everywhere I've been to. It could be my behavior. It could be something else. I don't know. But anyway, I thank you. Thank you so much for having me.